Hello and welcome to the Leader to Leader podcast, a Chime Foundation series where we bring you the best of the best in digital health leadership. I'm Russ Branzell, your host for this podcast and the president and CEO of Chime, the College of Healthcare Information Management Executives. We continue to live and evolve through challenging times for healthcare professionals, our industry partners, and all those people that we serve. Leaders from across our industry have proven their talent and determination as they innovate and transform their organizations to meet the moment and shape the future. We're proud to know those leaders and support them here at Chime. Today, we are welcoming an amazing industry executive who, like many of our Chime members, is fascinated with the new trends in technology. He is an award-winning author of a book, Success Breakthrough, and is a recipient of the ET Now Business Leader of the Year Award for Technology. He has been distinguished by the Times Group as one of the top 50 promising leaders in Asia and a true friend of Chime. I'm so grateful to welcome one of my dear friends, the Chief Executive Officer of Gaz Technologies, Sumit Ganguly. Welcome to the program, Sumit.
Russ, thank you so very much. And I'm truly privileged and humbled to be invited to this event. And more important, I really consider you a dear friend to me and the company. And we perpetually seek your counsel and really find Chime to be of huge value to everything that we're trying to do in the healthcare provider space.
Well, Sumit, I'm a crazy traveling man. I'm always on the road. I'm on another six-week stint here, and I can't even count it how many countries and how many cities I'll be in. But you're just as busy, if not a busier traveler. Where today are you doing this podcast from?
So I'm in south of India, in Chennai, which is, of course, the capital of the state Tamil Nadu. And most important being that it's also the healthcare capital of India. We're really very proud of one of your friends, Apollo Hospital. And Apollo Health is one of the largest health providers for Asia. And we have, again, the privilege of working with them in their IT services area. So I'm in Chennai right now and really would love to invite all your Chime members to visit us in Chennai. There's a very vibrant Chime out of India with a large number of leaders actually from the southern part of India supporting it. And it is really replete with lovely ancient temples, some great fiery food. And of course, the coastline is beautiful in Chennai.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times. It's an amazing and beautiful place. But as you said, it's marked with history, both from the native religions and languages there, plus even Christianity. St. Thomas Cathedral is there, one of only three cathedrals in the world, true cathedrals in the world. And so it is truly a melting pot of technology along with culture. And I think that's what makes it such a neat place. Well, let's just jump into a little bit about that melting pot of technology and what's happening in the world. And you cannot open up a web browser. You can't, if you happen to see a real newspaper or turn on a newscast, you cannot turn one on or get in a conversation with anybody in our industry if AI doesn't come up. It is gone from something we were talking about this conceptual kind of mystical thing that was going to enter to now it is prime time everywhere. And it's happened really, really fast. Where if you think about it, just over the last few years, we've gone from the concept to now everybody's either, or maybe even both, completely freaked out about it, or now completely enamored with it, how it's going to fix every problem in the world. And matter of fact, I'm not sure everybody even has the same definitions of some of these things out there, other than the fact that they believe this, that we're truly entering into a whole new economic state, maybe even a new an economic industrial revolution, which really will change the very fabric of how we operate as a society as we move forward. A couple of those terms that we hear right now that I think can be a bit confusing. One is just this concept of what is AI? And then the other part of this is what is generative AI? And that's what we really start hearing a lot about in healthcare right now is this concept of generative AI. I'd love to hear first your thoughts just on AI in general. Somebody as brilliant as you, what's your thoughts just on AI in general and where we are relative to maybe its maturity? And then maybe a little bit of difference of the application of just the general concept versus what we're seeing now with Gen AI.
I'm sure I'm repeating a lot that people have read, but even at the risk of being repetitive, AI has been in our firmament of imagination for the longest time. If at all, Japan from the 60s were talking about this whole fifth generation computing and thinking computing. We've had this whole concept of artificial intelligence for a while, but now with the advent of faster computing and large storage, all this is real. But really speaking, I have kind of delved into it for a while now, Russ, and you were gracious enough to host one of our customer advisory forum where we actually spoke about generative AI. This is real, not to belabor the point or not to kind of sound rhetorical. A lot of people poo-poo this and they kind of mention that this is just a passing fad. But I've come to conclusion that this is real. And if you'll allow me some statistics before I define and pass through the elements of AI, if I may, few data points that I've started seeing, which I think would be of use to your members. 80% of the workforce could have at least 10% of their task impacted by generative AI. So I'm again repeating, majority of all of us are going to see a transformation and an impact in the way we work and what we do or what our colleagues deliver by almost 10%. 50% of the task could be performed significantly faster with the same level of quality using generative AI. Generative AI, the way we know it, is again very different from regular AI. AI was basically what we knew used to be analytical AI. And in analytical AI, you're largely solving for analytical tasks faster. You're trying to do more stuff more efficiently than humans. But what generative AI is able to do is what we are basically stating from the name. It is used to create new content on par with humans and greatly enhancing humans. I mean, we did see you write a poem for one of our dear friends using generative AI. So this whole concept of creating content as against using data, which is predictive insights or cluster or evaluating data, which is the analytical AI, that's the difference. Analytical AI, you're largely parsing data, classifying, predicting, clustering, while generative AI, you're really creating content, though it's a concept of large language module. So that's one key difference. Again, there are various aspects of AI. We actually, Russ, have been working with AI and with IIT Madras for the last 6 years. We've been working on reinforced learning. There's a concept called supervised learning, unsupervised learning, but they are all parameters of analytical AI. So that is really where we are. The reason why ChatGPT in 2.5 months was able to reach almost 1 million users, while it took Spotify around 5 months, is because it is truly transformational. And finally, I will say this to you, that videos, pictures, code, all of that will get impacted by generative AI. Because what we are now interchangeably using ChatGPT with generative AI, but the world of generative AI is far broader than ChatGPT. I think that's really what I would mention, that these are some of the elements of ChatGPT or generative AI, and it is truly transformational.
Wow. Yeah, it was interesting. I got into a conversation with somebody the other day who probably more like me, doesn't live in this every single day, at least reads about it and doesn't work in it like you are. And they said, what's the real difference of this? And I said, I had to think of a really simple way of explaining this to this person, not because they're a simple person, but that's just where they come from. And I thought, the real difference is two words, is the difference between recognition and creation.
Yeah.
That the world of AI, which we've been living in a while, is really good at recognizing patterns, at understanding content and saying, look at these 8 million different code sets and find every time it says, submit Ganguly's name. Well, it would take a human being years to do that. Whereas if a computer does it with AI and looks for patterns, they could do it in microseconds. And the difference would be telling it to create the code sets that have you in that. That would be this concept of generative. What is generated is this concept of newness that a human didn't have to do it. And I think that's where we're really going to get interesting here as it affects healthcare, because it's a very human labor intensive business. And one that we really, I think, struggled with over the last 15, 20 years of really introducing the concept of automation, of digitization. And it wasn't an easy and smooth process for us as we put in electronic health records and ERPs and other systems to try to automate and digitize healthcare. But now we have some basis, some foundation to build on. And you are on the front lines of seeing customers do everything from, for all intents and purposes, outsourcing the old school technology to now really embracing technology as a pivotal change agent. I'd love to hear what you're seeing with your customer base. What they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out this journey of AI.
You know, what they are doing right now, they're really being a little circumspect. And I kind of agree with the approach they're adopting. You're hearing about this whole aspect of data leakage, security issues, a whole host of bad actors trying to commit some amount of malfeasance by introducing code which is not supposed to be there. So the first thing that I'm seeing, and especially healthcare, we do expect them to be very judicious in using technology. So we are seeing, one, that they are carving out areas where they can use and deploy generative AI, Russ. And I'm sure you've been seeing it more than anyone else. But I am definitely seeing some specific use for generative AI. Continuing with that letter C of being circumspect, if I were to be a little fancy, one of them could be concession or the ability to summarize massive amounts of information and draw insights. That's an area which is very relevant for healthcare, right? You can actually have large reams of data about Sumit or about Russ in disparate area. And if you're really trying to work on personalized medicine, it would be perfect for the doctor to get a summary or a concession of all this data points about a particular patient at one area. That's one. The second one is customer engagement. Using service chatbots in recommender or task automation. But my favorite model for generative AI, Russ, and I think you'll love it, is using telemedicine, someone who is challenged verbally using sign language, and then you use image rendering generative AI to convert those sign languages into spoken words or into text or into sentences. And that's then deciphered and interpreted by the doctor to kind of doing some remedy for the patient. I'll pause here. I'm sure you want to react to that one, Russ.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think your hypothesis there, or your foundation that they're kind of easing in, I'll kind of rephrase it as, they're as terrified of this as they've ever been of anything, also as thrilled with this as anything they've ever had to deal with. And I think that's a testament to not only the potential, but also the newness of this. And I think we're in a very strange place, because when we put in an electronic health record, I mean, when I was a CIO over 20 plus years, I did that 4, 5, 6 times. You know, it may have been a better system. It may have been a newer system, may have been a more expensive system, but it was still just a system. Radiologies, radiologies, labs, lab, pharmacies, pharmacy. We haven't done anything fundamentally new like this in a long time. This is a thing that I think is testing people's cognitive ability in a really positive way, to think beyond just the simple task of automation, the simple task of answering a phone. And I think your assumption there about workforce replacement is pivotal. We've done some analysis, and if you look at just two of the primary economically developed worlds, countries out in the world, UK and the United States, both of them in the next 3 to 5 years will lose 18 to 15% of its workforce due to retirement without being replaced, which means there's nobody to do the work, which means we have to think fundamentally different and have what jobs we even want to be done, how we want them to be done, and who we want them to be done by. And then we'll pick your wonderful country of India, which I've got some statistics on that. You all are 2.8 million nurses short now, and it will only grow. There is no replacement. By the way, the entire world produces less than 2.8 million nurses per year through the graduate programs, which means we will never have enough human labor to fill all the vacant jobs moving forward for at least multiple generations, which means we have to massively think different than we ever before. Matter of fact, as I go around and speak now, I kind of rephrased the presentation to, we are playing a new game. The problem is everybody's still playing by old rules, and AI is going to break the old rules, and we have to think new as we move forward. So I think it's really interesting. So do you see some of this stuff going on, Sumit? I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on some real applications to healthcare, on some things that you think, we really could fix healthcare and nursing and make physicians' lives less burdensome and some of those kinds of things. So maybe it gets a little beyond the hype and maybe is a little bit more reality.
Yes. And I'm going to again goad you to talk about your definition of AI. You're very eloquent about it. You call it augmented intelligence as against artificial intelligence. And if I were to borrow that, one of the larger peer provider, what they're doing is they're looking at radiology and using video and text to identify a lot of the prognosis and the diagnosis of the doctors based on the radiology report. And that's then provided to the physician, who may or may not use it. But generative AI is giving them a lot of augmented intelligence in terms of their diagnosis. So that's one use case that we are seeing. And we've personally worked with a client in that area. And that comes in this whole concept of creative content, where you use videos or text and try and do some inference and then do some augmented intelligence on them. So that was one use case. And the other one, when I talked about concession, largely helping doctors with a lot of generated content, which reduces the amount of documentation that's required to be done by the nurses or the doctors, and they can do more patient engagement. Those are genuine healthcare-related use cases. And finally, in classical coding, we are seeing best developers see almost a 50 to 80% speed gain in terms of productivity. But you talked about India again, and if I may, this generative AI, Russ, is not sparing of mediocrity. We often feel, and that's something that I'm reading more, that if anything is under attack through generative AI, that's mediocrity. Junior developers or software developers, they will actually experience a 7 to 10% decline in speed by using generative AI. And there'll be a lot of new roles for the practitioners. Prompting and prompting of the coding will be a very, very important function, because classical coding, classical testing, all that will be replaced by generative AI.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when you think about the potential. I was recently in the NHS working with some of the senior nurses there, part of their scholars program, and I made kind of a flippant comment that we've got to figure out how to get rid of 20 to 30% of the useless workload on nurses. Or one, they're just going to continue to burn out and leave. But really, two, that there won't be enough nurses to do the job. And one of the nurses, you know, very politely in a good British way, raised her hand and said, I have a comment about that. And I said, sure, what? She goes, you're completely wrong. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, and I said, please challenge me. And she goes, the number is 60 to 80%. She goes, 60 to 80% of what I do today and what our nurses do today need to be stopped, and we don't need to be doing it. We need to be focused on the 20% that really is patient value added, that really makes a difference in care for our organizations and the patients we serve. And I was really challenged with that. And I asked her for a couple of examples, and she said, why are you paying a skilled clinician to stock shelves? Why are you paying people to do inventory? All these things that can be done with technology. And it was just blown away. I was actually talking to somebody the other day about this, and I thought it was really interesting when I thought about it and the challenge back to me. And I said, here's a perfect example of how generative AI can not only learn, interpret, and then create. And that is, I believe in the next 3 to 5 years, the skill of typing will be gone, which means nurses and doctors won't be doing documentation anymore, which means a huge part of their administrative burden is gone. Now, I may be wrong. It may be longer than 3 to 5 years. So challenge me on length, but don't challenge me on the concept. We will not be typing anymore. The skill of typing will not be taught anymore in the next decade. No one will know how to type, which means why? Well, then how are you going to code? You're going to code with AI. You're going to type. You're going to interpret with AI. All this is going to be verbal recognition as we move forward, which means it's going to completely change the way we function and how much we can get done in a daily basis. It'll just be an amazing thing for us. And I can go on example and example and example. How many jobs just in the American marketplace are the primary function is operating a vehicle, and in the near future. I mean, I don't have any grandkids today, but I will hopefully someday. My grandkids will not drive a car. They will actually not get behind a steering wheel and drive. A computer using AI, a computer using interpretive AI to be able to interpret all the situations around them will completely change the way they work. Think about the impacts that might have on healthcare as we move forward. So I think it'd be really interesting. Rebuttal to that, Sumit? Anything?
Yeah, the other one, very important, is patient engagement. Co-pilots, which are really components of generative AI, could actually guide patients through personalized journeys. I was again talking to our mutual friend out of Boston, and he is actually building something where when someone is calling into a hospital and he wants to really get into pediatric orthopedic, can the generative AI guide them into that particular doctor's appointment booking and get a customer service or a patient service available 24/7 through intelligent chatbots, and then constant improvement of patient care through customer insights. So there are, again, conversations that almost 60% increase in patient interaction per service volume could be driven by generative AI automation over the next 5 to 10 years, Russ.
Go ahead. Well, I think it's interesting, Sumit, what you talk about there about this concept of engagement, because if you think about how short of a period of time during any one calendar year, 365 days a year, you really are a patient versus a human being. And you know, you've encouraged me to stay on this wellness journey that I'm on. But it is interesting. I don't think about the current healthcare system that I even work in as an integral part of my wellness journey. That's just not what I think about as I move forward. I think about it much differently. All the places I've engaged, all the people that are engaging me in my wellness journey are not in any way part of the traditional health system that is out there today. And I'm spending significant amounts of my own money willingly to do that, to be healthier as I age and as I move forward. It'll be interesting to see if the existing health system can flex and move as it thinks about engagement. Yes, when we need it from an illness perspective or when we're not well, but to shift into a place where they're actively engaged in my life from a wellness perspective. I think it's going to be a challenge for them because I think companies using AI have really started to figure this out.
No, I think there, if you'll allow me to digress a little bit out of AI, and you and I have talked a lot about it. Cleveland Clinic has this whole department, which is functional health, which is longevity medicine and longevity health, headed by Dr. Mark Hyman. There is a whole host of work going on in that area, and patient engagement into health wellness as against sickness cure, I think will be a very important thing that what we are trying to achieve here.
Well, let's get back to our friends and our peers that are our listeners here on this program, and that's our healthcare professionals out there in this digital world. And if you had to give them some advice on maybe they haven't completely jumped into this AI thing yet and they haven't really figured it out. And if you could give them some advice on one, what they should be doing, kind of the thought process is, you know, should they be shedding off the old technology concept and management and focusing their team's efforts into the AI arena? What does that mean? Or are there guardrails that we should be putting up to protect ourselves? There's a new movie coming out basically where AI gets away. It's the latest version of, you know, the Terminator going to destroy us all. But the reality is there are those fears out there in the world, and there are probably some of it that's founded. So if you could put some thoughts towards, one, getting involved in this, but also maybe how do you put some guardrails around this?
Sure. No, that's a very good question. I often say, Russ, a good question is one for which one is prepared. So I kind of have been thinking about this because I assumed that would be an important enabling question. The way companies can really address and use and harness generative AI could be three ways. One, there's this whole concept of a taker where you take some of this off-the-shelf generative AI solution and use that into some kind of a workflow. That's a taker. And a lot of the providers could really do that as a use case. Silo it as a separate entity so that none of their data is impacted, but be a taker. Once they reach a little bit of an advanced stage, they could assume that they could start becoming a shaper. Shaper being where they customize and fine-tune some of the existing Gen AI models for their hospital and do some use case needs. And finally, they can also be a maker where they actually develop a new foundational model from scratch and tailor it for their larger organization. So I repeat again, the approach they can adopt, Russ, is either be a taker, which is your classic case of crawl, walk, and run, be a taker, then be a shaper, and finally be a maker. And in that, most important thing could be for their leaders to start focusing a lot on the training aspect and look at technology, of course, and before they immediately deploy it into clinical, look at some of the peripheral functions. And some of the things that they could look at is, number one, look at some form of major familiarization and training into the tools or the prompt engineering that I was talking about. Because if they have to move from a taker to a shaper, they will need to know a lot about prompt engineering. And then look at managing risk. That's going to be very, very important. Either use partners or experts or consultants to look at the risk in terms of security, in terms of IP, in terms of quality, and then look at the overall aspect of the whole infrastructure, the tools that they're selecting, their code base, look at the productivity metrics, because using technology for the sake of using technology is a fool's errand. So therefore, again, productivity metrics becomes extremely important for them to measure. So baselining productivity, looking at the quality, architecture, the metrics of GenAI, and constantly and continuously measuring the improvement for the hospital. And then again, lastly, try and be a shaper and a maker and deploy generative AI for higher complexity use cases for us.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I think the question we always have to ask ourselves, or at least our customers and our health systems should be asking themselves, are who are they? Are they the leaders that are willing to take some risk and fail and make a little bit of a mess of this? Or are they fast followers that want others to do that first and they can adopt fast? Or, you know, it's okay to be a laggard as long as you have a strategy on how to adopt once this thing becomes primary. And I think that's what we're seeing out there in the marketplace right now. I love dividing things in thirds, but I don't know if this one is exactly right, but I think that we probably have most of the people we know in the industry, we probably easily put into one of those three buckets in their approach to this. And it's a challenging time for healthcare, and the fact that post-COVID, they're still running on razor thin to no margins, sometimes negative margins still, super busy, lots of projects, all at the exact same time battling probably one of the greatest labor challenges they've ever had, which will probably only get worse in the near term as we move forward. And so maybe as our time is wrapping up here, maybe as I just painted that unbelievably doom and gloom picture, Sumit, we're also seeing amazing innovation. We're seeing change. We're seeing people really challenged to do new and unique things. Maybe some final thoughts from you on kind of state of the industry and what keeps you so positive as a great influence on us to do things better?
No, I think what we are seeing in terms of healthcare providers, there is a genuine desire to do more with technology and be transformational. I'm seeing some of the largest of the players. They often say that, right? A crisis is an important opportunity we should never let go of. And I think the existential crisis that we faced with COVID and the post-COVID aftermath in terms of huge budget challenges that the providers have faced have really forced most of them to relook at technology, Russ, in terms of what they could do to do it faster, cheaper, and better. And that's something that we are seeing extensively, be it in their managed services area, in the cybersecurity area, data management, data interoperability, analytics, and now, of course, leveraging this new transformational tool of generative AI. But I would definitely join you in cautioning them that there is some potential risk which may not be exhaustive, insecure code. They need to really look into the legal and the regulatory usage of generative AI, the ethics and the reputation of the healthcare providers becomes crucial, and they could be very rendered vulnerable using generative AI, because the threat actors could leverage GenAI for some malicious purposes, increasing the frequency of their attacks and the complexity level. So tread carefully, but it is, as Confucius said, it's an interesting time, but you don't know whether it's a blessing or a curse.
Well, one thing I do know, Sumit, amazing human beings like you will not be replaced by AI anytime soon. Thank you so much for all you do for Chime. Thank you so much for what you do for our industry. You are truly a hero. And for our listeners out there, you should follow this amazing human being who's really challenging us as an industry to do things the right way for the right reasons. So, Sumit, thank you for all you do for us.
No, Russ, thank you again, sincerely. And to all your leaders, we draw heavily from what you have been promoting at Chime around the world. And we really feel privileged to be associated with this industry. And as I always remind you, my father was a cardiologist. So this is some way or the other that I'm attached to everything that he was.
Well, thank you again. And thank you for all of our listeners for joining us for this episode of the Chime Cast. You can visit us at our website, chimecentral.org/media, or at Spotify to listen again and check out all of our great podcasts from amazing healthcare leaders. Continue to innovate, transform, and create positive change to advance and improve health and care throughout the communities you serve. For now, stay safe and God bless.